On August 21st, 2009, a young mother wanted a night out. 21-year-old Rose Marie Bly had two children under the age of two. Rose stayed home with the kids while her husband, whom she had just married in February of that year, worked. Rose told her husband that she was going to go visit her cousin, who lived near their home in St. Croix Falls, Wisconsin. But Rose never made it. Her case received a fair amount of local attention, but not a lot of clues, so eventually it faded from the public consciousness. That is, until 12 years later, when her family was facing another tragedy. The disappearance of her niece, Summer Wells. When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell you the stories of those who never came home. Today, I want to tell you the story of Rose Marie Bly. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back.
Thank you for joining us once again. So I saw, you know, you looked at me a little bit because last week we brought you the story of Summer Wells.
Yeah.
And this week we are covering the case of her aunt, who is also missing, Rose Marie Bly.
Who went missing 12 years previous to Summer going missing. That's crazy.
Yeah. So Rose is... Candace Summer's mom is her sister, her younger sister.
Why didn't that come up in the last episode?
Because, like, I hadn't researched it yet, and I didn't know a whole lot about it other than the fact that, you know, once Summer's case was really gaining a lot of attention, you know, people were digging into the family and digging into their past. And then, you know, somebody found out about Rose. And so now it's just like kind of this thing that's thrown out there when people talk about Summer's case. So I actually just decided to, you know, leave it out of that episode completely with the idea that I wanted to actually look into it and do make it its own episode and tell her story.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. You know, obviously, anybody that goes missing deserves, you know, a spotlight so that you know, their name and information gets out there. But with the cases tied so closely together, same family, like, I mean, there's got to be overlapping suspects, or unless the,
I mean,
the local PD just like. Didn't think to that was suspicious, that two people in the
same family. No, they definitely did. I mean, I don't know, you know, what the police in Tennessee really think about it, but once Summer went missing, so this takes place in Polk County, Wisconsin. The investigators there did make a statement, and they're like, listen, we're aware of what's happening down in Tennessee.
So like, they were at least tangentially involved.
Like. Oh, yeah, for sure. And since then, I mean, they have... come out and said that they have no reason to believe that the cases are linked.
I don't believe in coincidences. That is way, it's way too close for me.
Yeah. Well, and we can talk about that, you know, toward the end, once we tell her story, because I do have an opinion on this, but I don't really want to get into it yet.
Sure. Suspense for the listeners.
Yeah, but I mean, if you haven't listened to our last episode, which was on Summer Wells, you probably should listen to that. Well, I mean, actually, I don't know if it matters if you listen to it first or second, but either way.
Or maybe listen to this first and then go back.
Yeah, because it's like chronological, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, because there are, you know, some overlapping people. I won't say overlapping suspects, but like, yeah, I mean, there are people that show up in both.
Yeah, it's the same family. So.
Exactly. It's very, very interesting. But before we get into all of this, we have some new Patreon members to shout out.
Yay! So yeah, I feel like we haven't done this in a while.
I know. It's, you know, I feel kind of bad because like anytime I do a two-parter, we get an influx of Patreon subscribers because they can get the part two like right away instead of waiting a week.
So I see what you're doing.
I know. I really don't do it because of that, but it is. Like, it does happen. So, I don't know. Anyway.
It's the hook.
I know. I'm sorry, guys. So, thank you very much to Hope, Heather P., Katrina A., Mandy, Mindy W., Kelsey, and Aaron O. I think all ladies. I mean, listen, I'm not trying to be presumptuous. Like, you know, I don't know how any of you identify, but your support means the world to us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Everybody.
You know, I know... A lot of you, like, you're like, okay, just get to the freaking story. But before we do, I really want just to take another moment to mention one of our very first listeners and my friend, Susan Bohoric. Okay. I just wrote this up and I thought it was going to be all right. All right. Okay. So we're going to try to get through this. I met Susan my senior year of college when I was working as a production assistant at WHSV, which was the local ABC affiliate in my college town. Susan was the co-anchor of the morning show, which is, you know, the show I worked on because like I was a very cool kid in college. I woke up at 4:15 every single weekday and went to work at this like weird, like small market news show and went to bed at like 8:30 every night. Anyway, so, you know, I only worked there for that 1 year and then I graduated and, you know, kind of moved on, got a job. But I stayed in the area and we kept in touch. She ended up getting a bigger and better job at in Roanoke. It's a bigger market. And randomly, a couple years later, my job actually transferred me down there. And I knew exactly zero people in Roanoke, but Susan took me under her wing and basically like gave me a social life there. Like I would not have ever left my apartment basically except to go to work if it weren't for her. You know, I only lived in Roanoke for a year and then I ended up moving on and but you know, we kept in touch and over the years like she would always read my dumb shit on the internet, like, you know, the stupid blog that I started in like 2007 or whatever. Like, you know, she would read the TV recaps that I, you know, would write when I actually started getting paid to write. And she would always comment and like send me messages and stuff. And when we started this podcast, she was like one of our very first listeners and, you know, would tell me how much she really loved it. And on July 8th of this year, Susan passed away. She had been battling ovarian cancer. She actually beat it twice. And but unfortunately, she did pass away a few weeks ago. It was 3 days before her 47th birthday. Susan was completely goofy, hilarious. She made friends everywhere she went. And you know, she was so funny. She actually went viral like years ago. I mean, she was, I feel like when people just started going viral, when that started to become a thing and she ended up on Anderson Cooper's show on CNN. And it's always been one of my favorite videos. And I think I share it almost every year on Facebook. So I want to share it with you. I'm going to link it in our show notes. So, you know, after you listen to this episode, or you know what, before, if you just want something happy before we get into this like upsetting case, just watch it. It'll absolutely brighten your day. It brightens my day every time I watch it, every time I see her and hear her laugh. So anyway, I just wanted to take just a quick moment and introduce you to my friend. So thank you for bearing with me through that, for indulging me. But now let's talk about this week's story, the story of Rose Marie Bly. Rose Marie Bly was born in Grantsburg, Wisconsin on September 16th, 1987 to Candace Harrer and Kenneth Bly. Kenneth actually usually went by the name Jim, which his middle name was James. I know it's like Jim is not short for Kenneth. So anyway, Jim had two children prior to his marriage to Candace. a daughter named Kathleen, and a son named Kenneth. Jim married his first wife in 1958, and they divorced in 1972 on grounds of cruelty. The couple had lived in Connecticut, but Jim eventually made his way to Galveston, Texas, and that's where he met Candace Haar. Now, Candace is Summer Wells' grandma. And if you recall from Summer's story, she was there that day, and she and Candace, Summer's mom, and Candace were all planting flowers shortly before her disappearance.
All right, so we've got Ken Jim.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then his son, Ken.
Yeah.
And then we have Candace and her daughter, Candace.
Yeah, no, so the funny thing is that, so yes, Kenneth and his son, Kenneth, the daughter named Kathleen. His first wife's name is Kathleen.
Oh, God.
And then
I need a chart. I need a chart. I know. I can't see it.
Okay, so the first two kids, Jim's first two kids, don't come into this, so we don't need to worry about them.
Ken Jim.
Yeah, Ken Jim. But yeah, so after that first marriage, Ken Jim met Candace. Now, he was significantly older than Candace by about 26 years.
Yikes.
Yeah.
26?
Yeah. The two married in Galveston, Texas in 1981 when Kenneth was 45 and Candace was just 19.
Ugh. You and I both became parents at 27.
Yeah.
Ew.
I know. The couple had three daughters, starting with Candace. So Summer's mom, Candace, is the oldest daughter. And she was born 11 months after they got married. And that's the thing. So originally, I was like, oh, Candace, you know, it must have been like a shotgun wedding. But it doesn't appear that that was the case. So Candace was followed by Jeannie and Rose, whom he called Rosie. The family was still in Texas when Candace was born, but at some point they ended up moving to Greensburg, Wisconsin. I don't have a lot of information about their marriage, but, you know, there have been rumors, actually, interestingly, that Candace, like Grandma Candace, was abusive toward him. But I don't, you know, I don't know. That's just literally internet rumor. It is not based on police reports or anything like that. In any case, they did divorce when the three girls were in high school, which was basically like, you know, sometime in the early to mid 90s is what it sounds like. Allegedly, Candace actually left Jim for a woman and didn't have any contact with any of her children for several years. I couldn't find a record of their divorce for some reason. I found the record of his first divorce. Couldn't find a record of this divorce, but I did find a record of Candace living in Las Vegas in 1996. So I'm guessing that's, you know, kind of what happened and where she took off to for a while.
So this is Grandma.
Grandma, yeah.
From Summer Wells.
Right.
Okay.
So the three girls stayed in Greensburg with their father, and Rose attended Greensburg High School, where she navigated being a teenager without her mother. Now, I'm not sure about Jeannie, but it sounds like Candace, who was about 5 years older than Rose, left home not too long after she graduated high school. She moved around the country and actually like was a carny for a while, which I didn't know. I actually learned that in this case. She like literally like traveled with the carnival.
Doing what?
I don't know. I mean,
was she like a sideshow or
no, like operating rides? I mean,
I don't know. You say a carny, then like my first thought is like, what was she like, the fucking hairy woman, the wolf? I mean,
this was in like the 90s, not like the 1890s. Like, what are you talking about?
I mean, hey, look, the 90s was a weird fucking time.
I mean, it was, but not like that. Before Candace moved away, though, she actually, and I mentioned this in the Summer Wells episode, she had two children, and this is before she met Don Wells, and she was in Wisconsin at the time, and Rose would babysit for the kids while Rose was in high school still, and apparently it was a bad situation. I talked about how, you know, she lost custody of those kids, and Rose actually called CPS on her sister at one point.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't have any details. I don't know if it was because of abuse or neglect or why she called CPS. But yeah, that was apparently something that, you know, that did happen. But by, you know, the time Rose got out of high school, Candace had moved away and wasn't in the area any longer.
It still illustrates, you know, the cycle of violence and mm-hmm. just cycles in general of,
yeah,
of behavior that clearly was, you know, a part of this family.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing. And that's what really becomes clear once you learn more about this story and you kind of put it with Summer's story, is that there is a lot of, yes, generational cycles, generational trauma, you know, patterns that are repeating themselves. While she was in high school, Rose met a guy, and he was older than her by about 4 years. So he was already out of school.
It's less than 26.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, they had mutual friends, though. So that's kind of how they met. And they got serious pretty quickly. I mean, to the point where when she first graduated school, Rose actually went and lived with his dad. So her boyfriend, Christopher Larson, you know, because he was older and everything, he had already like moved out of the house and was sharing an apartment with friends. So he was living there. And when Rose graduated, so she loved horses. Like, Rose is a horse person. She has loved horses her entire life. And Chris's dad had horses. And so she actually moved in with him and took care of his horses for him. But not too long after graduation, Rose became pregnant. And once that happened, Chris moved out of the apartment that he was sharing with friends and moved into his dad's house with Rose. So basically, they just lived there together as they, you know, waited for the birth of their first child.
And she was, what, 18 at this point?
Probably 19, I think. Yeah. Now, after their first daughter was born, Rose actually got pregnant again almost immediately. Like, almost like it's nearly not physically possible to be pregnant any closer than she was. So they ended up having two daughters less than a year apart.
They fell into that whole myth that if you're
breastfeeding, you can't get pregnant. Yeah. When Rose disappeared, her kids were 19 and 9 months old. Rose dove headfirst into being a mom. Like, she loved her kids. She loved being a mother. You know, that was just something she had always just wanted in her life. But, you know, the life in general wasn't the fairy tale that she had probably dreamed of.
Did it mirror the life that she grew up in?
It actually might have. Kind of. Yeah. And I mean, listen, I don't think it's too shocking to believe that two young people who had two children in less than, you know, in like a year, and she's right out of high school. Like, yeah, they had a rocky relationship. I don't think that's the most shocking thing.
No.
Regardless of their backgrounds.
Right.
But the nature of the rocky relationship differs based on who you ask, you know?
Okay.
Rose's best friend at the time has said that Christopher was controlling and that it was his demand that she stay home with the children instead of her choice.
Mm.
She also accused Christopher of not letting Rose leave the house to see friends or family, though leaving the house to see friends or family is literally what she was doing the night that she disappeared.
Right.
So, again, these are just what people are saying. So even though they were having problems, you know, nobody disagrees with that statement, they did seemingly want to make it work. And in February of 2009, they were married. So this is after both of the kids were born. But, you know, they did decide to get married. Unfortunately, things only seemed to get worse from there. And shortly after their wedding, the couple's relationship also allegedly became physical. Christopher told police that she slapped him while she accused her husband of putting her in a chokehold and slamming her to the ground. Now, this all happened in June of 2009. So just like I said, a couple months after they got married and the police were called out to the home. During this incident, though, only Rose was arrested.
That's interesting.
Yeah. She initially had a bench warrant out on her for misdemeanor disorderly conduct, but it was later amended to a domestic abuse. In July of 2009, just 1 month before she went missing, Rose went to court and pleaded not guilty to the charge. However, she never had a chance to resolve the case fully. There have been accusations from, you know, some people in Rose's life that Chris was abusive toward her. But the only police records are this, where she's the one who got arrested.
And you said she slapped him? Is it?
Yeah.
So I wonder if they arrested her because that was the only physical evidence of assault.
Yeah, I mean,
I mean, if we are to believe both sides,
right?
A chokehold wouldn't necessarily display any bruising.
Yeah.
Versus a slap could potentially, I mean, I guess it depends on how hard the slap is or whatever.
Yeah.
There's potential for bruising or some sort of actual physical evidence. Whereas a chokehold, there might not be physical evidence. I don't know. We weren't there. Who knows?
Right. But, you know, back to your question of like, is the pattern of like how she grew up, is that repeating herself? I mean, like I said, there were the rumors that her mother was violent toward her father. Right. So perhaps they were. I don't know. Now, around that same time, and from what I understand stemming from this incident, Christopher allegedly filed for divorce. And I only say allegedly because though this has been like widely reported, I couldn't find the court records that confirmed it. However, there was another court record from that time, a request for a paternity test. Remember when I talked about True Diagnostics' True Age Test? Well, I took it myself and the results blew my mind. I was very wrong. If you remember, I was worried about my brain and not my cardiovascular health. And it turns out my brain's fine, but my cardiovascular health needs work. But luckily, my biological age was really right on track with my actual age, which is good because research shows that if your biological age is even just 5 years older than your actual age, your risk of developing diseases like cancer or heart disease can jump by as much as 30 to 50%. That's a big deal, and it's completely avoidable. The good news is nearly 90% of biological aging is in your hands. It's driven by things like your lifestyle, your habits, and the environment you're in, which means that you have a lot of control over it. The True Age test didn't just give me a number. It showed how quickly my heart, brain, liver, and immune system are aging, and it was eye-opening. And I will say, like, I definitely picked up the workouts after I learned that my cardiovascular health isn't as good as I thought it was. The test itself was super easy and convenient. I did it from home, and it was just a quick, painless finger prick that I made Ethan do because I was too scared. You send it off in a tiny sample in a prepaid package, and in about 2 to 3 weeks, you'll get a detailed online report about your aging and health. So if you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to truediagnostic.com and use my code ATTWG to get 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's truediagnostic.com and use ATTWG at checkout to get 20% off. Your future self will thank you. Are you ready to lose weight? With Effecty, getting access to powerful GLP-1 weight loss medications has never been easier or more affordable. Effecty offers compounded semaglutide, the same active ingredient as the popular name brands, but for up to 80% less. These medications work by regulating appetite and blood sugar, helping you lose weight in a sustainable, science-backed way. Getting started is so simple. Just fill out a short medical questionnaire, then connect with a licensed provider through a quick chat-based telehealth consultation. If you're eligible, your prescription gets shipped straight to your door. No hassle, no waiting rooms. With transparent pricing, no hidden fees, and no membership required, Effecty is committed to making proven weight loss treatments accessible to everyone. Effecty gave me the opportunity to try their service out, and I have to say, it is just as easy as they say it is. I filled out the questionnaire, and within days, a package arrived at my door filled with everything I needed and detailed instructions. Their website also tells you everything you need to know, and you can always chat with your healthcare provider. It really is that simple and convenient. So if you're ready to level up your weight loss game, my listeners can now get $50 off of GLP-1 weight loss treatments at Effecty.com with code ATTWG at checkout. That's Effecty.com, EFFECTY.com, and use the code ATTWG to get $50 off your first month of GLP-1 weight loss treatment. No hassles, no memberships, and no hidden fees. So get started today. We sleep better when we sleep cool. As the weather is getting warmer, staying cool while we sleep will be top of mind. Organic and natural bedding sleeps cooler than cheaper synthetic alternatives, and they last longer too. A fresh season calls for a fresh start, and that includes your bed. From seriously soft organic cotton sheets to breathable silk and luxurious down duvets, Avocado Green's bedding makes it easy to reset your space sustainably. Perfect for hot sleepers in warmer months, Avocado Green sheets and duvet inserts are naturally breathable and help regulate temperature, so you sleep cool, dry, and comfortable all night long. Avocado bedding is thoughtfully designed and expertly crafted for lasting durability. From reinforced stitching to premium long staple organic fibers, every detail is made to stand the test of time, wash after wash, season after season. We sleep better when we sleep cool, so head to avocadomattress.com today to save 10% on all bedding and 50% on clearance bedding. Avocado, dream of better. Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, you can build the perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your dynamic, personalized closet. And the styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then when you're ready for new clothes, just swap them out for more new-to-you styles. So I've been using Armoire, and I'm actually wearing one of their shirts right now as I'm recording this, and it's a great idea. You don't have to commit to buying the clothes, but you can really start to explore your own personal style. Like if there's a trend or something that you've been wanting to maybe try but not commit to, this is absolutely perfect. Because if you don't like it, you just put it back in the bag and get something else. Because we've all been there. You open your closet, and even though it's packed, you feel like you have nothing to wear. And with Armoire, that's a thing of the past. They make it effortless for all women to turn heads with stylish everyday looks. You can rent high-quality designer clothing for any occasion, and it's all tailored to your personal style. Plus, you don't have to do laundry, and you don't have to go shopping. It truly could not be any easier. And right now, my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month, which is up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/ATTWG. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/ATTWG to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today. On June 4th, 2009, there was a filing for, quote, findings of facts / conclusions of law with judgment of paternity, end quote. This was for one of their daughters, though I'm not sure which one, if it was the older one or the younger one.
They were so close.
Yeah.
I would hope it would be the first one, if it, you know?
Because, yeah, like, right.
Because, like, who's stepping out, like, 2 days after having a kid?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, I'm not passing judgment here or anything, but, like, holy shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, in any case, the paternity question was only for one of the children. And, you know, the records show that there were a few related affidavits later that month, but then nothing in July. And then on August 6th, 2009, there was a motion and order for dismissal due to the fact that, quote, parties have reconciled and are again residing together, end quote.
So continuing the cycle of potentially abusive, not healthy relationships.
Right, exactly. And, you know, so I'm guessing that's why, I couldn't find the divorce filing, because it clearly never went through, although this didn't go through either and this was there. But in any case, there were breakups and makeups and paternity questions, and it was just not a good scene all around.
Well, as somebody who has filed for divorce several times, of course, this depends on jurisdiction. And
we don't know anything about Wisconsin.
Right, but typically, so first steps in that process are not always filing for divorce. It's filing a separation agreement, mm-hmm. which is not something that you'd be able to necessarily find as far as public record.
Okay, so do you think that maybe that's why the paternity test thing was there and not the divorce? So like maybe they wanted to establish paternity prior to filing for divorce, because that would affect like custody and other...
It would affect everything in the separation agreement.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Okay.
Yeah, maybe that would explain.
Yeah. So maybe he didn't actually file for divorce.
Yeah, but that's what everybody says.
Right.
Like, okay, if you're filing a separation agreement, it's the ultimate goal is divorce.
Right.
But that's typically the first step in filing for divorce. Now, at least in my experience in Maryland, DC, and Virginia. So.
Dear Lord.
Hey, you know, if I had my law degree, I'd be peddling my divorce attorney experience here. But.
So many missed opportunities. So not much is known about the weeks in between this dismissal on August 6th and Rose's disappearance on August 21st, but her mother, Candace, did give a little bit of insight in an interview. According to her, on August 19th, 2 days before she went missing, Rose called her. She told Candace that she had actually fallen off a horse a few days prior to that. Like I said, Rose was a huge horse person, and, you know, falls happen sometimes, even if you're good at riding.
Right.
But Rose was complaining of lingering headaches. And so Candace told her to go see a doctor, you know, like you would, right? But yeah,
potential for a concussion there if she's
still having headaches. Days later. I mean, that's not a great sign. But, you know, of course, she gave her the ultimate blow off answer of I'll think about it. And it doesn't appear that she ever did go to the doctor. So there is a possibility that Rose had an untreated concussion or other head injury at the time of her disappearance. And again, not confirmed. We don't know. But I think it's important to just at least kind of throw that out there.
Sure.
August 21st, 2009 was a Friday. And that afternoon, Rose and Christopher went to the mall with their girls to buy new cell phones. They both got new phones, and when they got home, she switched out her SIM card. So she put her old SIM card into the new phone so that everything transferred over from her old phone. On their way home, they picked up fast food and, you know, ate it once they got there. After dinner, she said that she was going to go to nearby Cushing, Wisconsin to see her cousin and go do karaoke. Rose and Christopher lived in St. Croix Falls, and Cushing was only like 4 or 5 miles away. The young mom wanted to go out and relax and, you know, have a few drinks and just hang out with her cousin. So around 7:30 p.m., she drove off and Christopher just went along with his evening.
Did she take her new cell phone?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the old one, too, I believe. Or maybe it was like in the car or something along those lines.
Sure.
At some point that night, some reports say around 9, Rose called Chris to check in, and she told him that she'd be home around midnight. Everything seemed good, and Christopher eventually fell asleep.
Okay, so wait, she called Chris later?
Yeah, like after she left.
So did she make it anywhere?
Well, he assumed so. I mean, like, she didn't say that she hadn't.
No, yeah, I know that. But you said she was going to go hang out with her cousin.
Right.
Did the cousin see her?
Well, yeah, I'm getting to that.
Okay. Trying to establish a timeline.
I know, honey. She calls it around 9 or so and says, like, listen, I'm going to be home around midnight. Seems cool. He goes to sleep, wakes up the next morning, no Rose. And, you know, he was surprised, but again, not panicked or anything, because, like, maybe she had a little too much to drink. Maybe she stayed the night at her cousin's house. You know, like, there are a billion reasonable explanations as to why she wasn't home. But, you know, he called her, obviously, and she didn't pick up. And so he, you know, started calling around, like, called the cousin and, you know, called her sister who lived, not Candace, her other sister, Jeannie, who, you know, lived in a nearby town, and, you know, asked to see if anyone knew where she was. But no one did. As the hours went on, he began to grow more concerned when he still couldn't get in touch with her and she still wasn't home. And he eventually, you know, called Jeannie to come and help him look for her. So Jeannie and her husband, who I don't know if they're married at the time, but in any case, they came over. The husband stayed with the kids. And then Chris and Jeannie went out. They went to, you know, like, Rose's friend's parents' house and, you know, called her friend who, you know, I guess he didn't know where they lived, but he knew where her parents were. It was like her friend from high school, you know, just stuff like that. They were just trying everybody in Rose's life, basically. Couldn't find her. Whether this is true or not, you know, Chris believed that he had to wait 24 hours before he was able to report her missing. And so, like, apparently he waited until, like, exactly 24 hours and called the police. So she was last seen Friday evening. She's officially reported missing Saturday evening.
Okay, but who actually saw her? Who was the last person that saw her? The cousin?
No. The last person who officially saw her was Chris. Because, and I don't know if Chris found this out from the cousin or if police found this out from the cousin, but she said that she had never made plans with Rose that night. So the question is, did Rose lie to Chris about where she was going?
Or was this all being reported from Chris to the police as far as the timeline of events?
Yes. So at this point, yeah, all of this is coming from Chris. The cousin's like, no, we never had plans. So again, we don't know if Rose lied to Chris about where she was going or if Chris is lying to the police and everybody else about what Rose told him.
So do we have any evidence of them actually going to the mall that night and picking up those cell phones?
Yes.
I understand there's two cell phones involved with her, but
right.
Did it actually happen that night?
That afternoon. Yes, it did. So there is mall surveillance footage that does show them going and buying these phones. And then I assume, you know, that's backed up by, like, financial records and things like
sure,
that.
Sure. But that's the last actual sighting of her was that afternoon.
From what I understand, yes.
Okay.
And I don't know if there's, like, video evidence or anything about the fast food trip that was between the mall and the house. I don't know one way or the other about that. But
no,
I
good
do
call,
know
but
that
that's close enough.
That's close enough. Exactly. Yeah.
So we're talking about more than 24 hours since she's been officially
physically
seen by anybody else other
outside
than
of the house. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Correct. Now, this cousin has not been publicly named, but I do want to say that it is not the cousin that has come up in various social media posts who is married to a registered sex offender. So basically, yeah, I know. That's the thing with this family is they do have a different cousin who is married to a sex offender. And that man, the sex offender, at one time, apparently prior to Summer being born, actually lived in Tennessee with Dawn and Candace. You know, people are trying, like, we're really making that connection because it started, you know, people just started posting as fact that that was the cousin, like his wife was the cousin that she was supposed to be meeting that night.
Right.
But the family has come out like multiple times and said, no, 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 not that cousin. They were not in Wisconsin at the time. They had like nothing to do with any of this. But the cousin, the cousin that Rose was, you know, supposedly supposed to be meeting that night, did allegedly say that Rose had asked her to lie for her in the past and say that they were together on nights when they were not.
Mm.
But she said that that was not one of those nights. Like, that's what she told police, that like Rose has asked her to do that before, but not that night. Like, she had no idea. And so basically in the story is Rose had used this cousin as a cover before, but the cousin like wasn't really completely on board with doing that. And so her response to Rose is basically like, well, you better hope that Chris doesn't call me, because like, I really don't want to lie to him about this. So like, she knew that Rose was telling Chris that she was with her, but like, she wasn't telling Chris that, you know what I mean?
Did the cousin ever come forward and say that Chris found out about that?
No, not, I have not heard that. I mean, he did for sure after the disappearance.
Yes,
but,
after the disappearance, but no. But before that.
Mm-mm.
Okay.
Because apparently he never called, like, any of those nights where she was like, hey, I need you to cover for me. Like, Chris never called to check up on her. So, like, it just never came up.
Okay, so that's important, though.
Yeah.
Because that establishes a pattern of behavior on her part.
Exactly.
And if Chris never actually found out that that was like a thing,
mm-hmm.
then it's fair to say that he probably believed that she was going over to her cousin's that night.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, no, it is. It's interesting, right?
Do you see?
No, I do. And I
see where I'm going with that, though?
I do.
Because, like, if Chris knew that was, like, a bullshit cover
right.
for her doing something else,
right.
then he could have very easily spun that if he was the one that did something to her.
Mm-hmm.
But if he never knew that until later, then it's fair to assume that he legitimately thought she was going over to her cousin's.
Yeah. And it's interesting because, again, you know, the friend did talk about how controlling he was and everything, but, like, if he were so controlling, you know, you would think that he would have called the cousin some of these other times to check up on her, you know?
Yeah, I mean, maybe he was controlling in other ways.
Yeah, I mean that's very true. That's very true.
Who knows? Who knows what she meant by he was controlling? Right.
Rose was rumored to have been having an affair around this time. Like, according to the cousin, Rose had a boyfriend. So the cousin knew about this. She was like kind of this unwilling participant in this whole thing, but she didn't know much about it. But she said that Rose never told her who the person was, who she was seeing. So I don't know if police ever verified, or if they were ever able to verify that Rose was having an affair. And then if they did, I don't know if they were ever able to find out with whom or interview that person. So that's like this other possible person that's just kind of hanging out there. And I don't know one way or the other. So police did continue to interview people in Rose's life, but, you know, they didn't really come up with anything. They, of course, checked cell phone records and everything. And I will say that early on, Chris's story about her calling and saying, like, I'm going to be out, I'll be back at midnight, was corroborated by phone records. Obviously not the content of the call.
Right.
But the call itself.
The call itself.
So the call itself did
some,
come
some
in.
Some length of time. It wasn't just like a call and hang up.
Exactly. Yeah. But 5 days after her disappearance, police did make a major discovery. With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom? Let me tell you about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions that you wish to ask. And then she can either type a response or use their voice to text feature, and mylifeinabook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and stories for eternity. Imagine discovering stories about her youth, adventures, and the challenges she overcame. This book becomes a legacy. It's something that you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. And this is something that Ethan and I had been thinking about doing with our parents. We have this podcasting equipment, so we wanted to find a way for them to tell their story. But I love this because it's so regimented. They send them a question every week, and it just makes it really easy and turnkey. And it just seems like a great way for us to get our parents' stories down so that our children and our children's children can have them. So if you're interested, check out mylifeinabook.com and use code ATTWG at checkout for 15% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's mylifeinabook.com and use code ATTWG for 15% off today. Has it ever felt like you're doing everything right? You're eating healthy, you're working out, and yet your energy still crashes, or your mood swings hit out of nowhere, like a twist in a crime story that you didn't see coming. Listen, I've been there too, and what I've discovered is that many of these issues could be tied to hormonal imbalances, like a hidden criminal lurking in the background, throwing everything off track. But here's the good news. This is one mystery that you can solve with Happy Mammoth. There's no need for a long investigation. Just take the free 2-minute quiz from Happy Mammoth. You answer a few questions about what you're experiencing and where you're at in life, and you'll uncover the real culprit behind your hormonal symptoms. And the best part? After taking the quiz, you'll get a personalized recommendation to help you balance your hormones so you can finally feel like yourself again. According to a survey, after taking Hormone Harmony, 86% of women started to lose weight. 77% said that it improved their mood. And the biggest benefit? 100% of women surveyed said they're feeling like themselves again. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code ATTWG at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code ATTWG for 15% off today. On August 26th, Rose's car was discovered abandoned in a parking lot in Grantsburg. Now, if you remember from the beginning of the episode, Grantsburg is where Rose grew up, and it's about 30 miles from St. Croix Falls, where she lived. Now, the parking lot is weird. It's been described in like a bunch of articles as a place where truckers sometimes park their like 18-wheelers when they're not working, but it just looks like a normal parking lot. Like, it's near a post office and a laundromat, so, I mean, it's not some big truck stop looking place or anything. It just literally looks like a parking lot in the middle of town. So police searched the car, but nothing appeared out of the ordinary. The keys were gone. So it seems as though somebody drove it there, parked, and then left as normal. There was like no signs of violence or, you know, damage to the car itself. Nothing like that.
What was found inside the car?
Nothing interesting.
So no cell phones.
Nope.
Nothing.
None of her. Yeah.
None of her immediate belongings.
Nope. Now, they gathered hair and fingerprints from the car, you know, but nothing has really come of it so far. The fingerprints all came back to Rose and her immediate family, like anybody who you would expect.
Would have had access to
exactly.
The car.
So it wasn't wiped down, basically. So the DNA, though, that they were able to gather, apparently it was a very small amount, and it's never been matched to anyone.
Did they say, like, what type of DNA
was
collected?
It was hair. Like, oh, I think they gather hairs.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, if it's her car, there's going to be, her hair is going to be in it.
For sure. But I think there were other hairs that they weren't able to match with anyone. But again, it's a car, like how many random people, you know? So it could mean something, it could not.
Right.
But again, with a case that's like the sum total of the physical evidence, you know? But interestingly, and I actually didn't read this in a lot of the initial reports, but apparently the front seat of the car was also pushed all the way back when they found it. Rose is only 5 feet tall.
Yeah, there we go.
And Chris is only a few inches taller than she is. So neither one of them would have been able to drive with the seat pushed back that far.
Mm. So we're thinking the other potential boyfriend.
Yeah, or anybody else, you know.
And given the proximity to where she grew up,
mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if the boyfriend was somebody that she knew when she was in high school.
Yeah, I do find that interesting that it was found in her hometown.
You said it was 30 miles from where she lived, right?
Yeah.
And it's close to her hometown. I mean, again, I don't believe in coincidence.
Yeah, like her mom still lived there and she worked there. And interestingly, that parking lot is a place that her mom, Candace, passed by every day on her way to work. And she says, she told this to a newspaper, that she had driven by that parking lot just 2 hours before she got the call that her daughter's car was found there. And she said that she did not see that car in that parking lot. So she believes the fact that the case had been starting to get more attention. So because, you know, by this time she had been missing for 5 days, it was starting to get some local news coverage. She and her friend, also named Rose, had been passing out flyers like everywhere. Police had actually done a helicopter search, but, you know, around her house. So like it was really starting to ramp up. So she believes that that kind of attention and pressure led somebody to move it from wherever it had been for the past 5 days and drop it off in that parking lot to be found.
That makes sense.
But yeah, I mean, she does not for a second believe that that car had been there since the 21st. Now, of course, a lot of people suspected Rose's husband, Christopher, of being involved in her disappearance.
Sure.
They had a rocky marriage that was publicly known. And, right. You know, you always, it's always the husband. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Police obviously interviewed him. He was given a polygraph, which he passed. And police did publicly say that, like, he always made himself available to them. Mm-hmm. And he seemed to be very upfront and, you know, acted as basically non-suspiciously as he could in that situation, I guess. The police chief at the time said that he passed the polygraph, like told reporters he passed the polygraph and they ruled him out as a suspect. Now, you know, there have been several police chiefs in the intervening 13 years, and the official position of the Polk County Sheriff's Office now is that nobody has been ruled out. Sure. Because, you know, she hasn't been found. You can't really rule anybody out.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, you can put somebody lower on the priority list of potential suspects.
Yeah. And it does appear that, you know, he did get, he got knocked down a few pegs, I guess, you know, so, on the suspect list.
Well, so if he's cooperative, I would assume that they searched their house. They obviously searched the car because they've found it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And if there's no evidence in the house of anything, if there's no evidence in the car of any blood or physical violence or whatever.
Right.
You also have to take into consideration they had two little kids. Obviously, you can't interview them as witnesses.
Right. Because the oldest one was, again, like 19 months old.
Right. But those are dependent children. Those are like very dependent.
Yeah.
On parents. So like if dad was murdering mom and then somehow disposed of the body, like all of that's going to take time while you have these infants at the house. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
like, do you strap them in the car seat and take them with you? Yeah, like, right, what are the logistics of this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's my point.
Right.
Like, it's not like, you know, oh, you've got a 5-year-old who you can put to bed or a 6-year-old or whatever. And, you know, they're asleep and you don't have to necessarily like stress about them.
Right.
You know, you're talking about two babies.
Yeah.
Who
19 months and 9 months.
Yeah. Who are going to wake up like a lot throughout the night. So it's not like you've got a whole lot of free time to do these things.
Right.
Now, of course, I understand. Yes, you can still do this and neglect the kids, whatever. But it just, it adds a little bit of complication there that might make it more difficult for him to actually commit these crimes.
Logistically.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good point.
Because then it's not even just committing the act. It's also cleaning up after yourself.
Right. Cleaning up and, like you said, disposing
right.
of the body in a way in that which nobody he hasn't finds been found it. In right. 13 years.
Yes.
Yeah. The police seemingly thought that he probably was not involved in this. But his actions a few weeks later made some people suspect him even more. Just about 3 weeks after Rose went missing, Christopher went back to court and filed for divorce. He also petitioned the court for full custody of their daughters.
I mean, that's a little odd. I'm not sure why he would petition the court to get full custody, given that there was no previous to him initiating the divorce proceedings, there was no divorce proceedings, so he's their father, like he has custody.
Well, no, that's a good question. That's the question that a lot of people have. They're like, all right, this is weird. You know, to them, like this is proof that he didn't care about her and that like maybe he orchestrated her disappearance in order to get the children or something like that. But according to Christopher's attorney, the reason that he moved so quickly, and again, this is actually what his attorney advised him to do, because Chris believed that Rose had run off on her own.
Well, the story that is being pushed forward here, it looks that way.
Right, exactly. And so he thought she ran off. And I don't know if by this point, 3 weeks later, he had found out about this boyfriend.
Mm. Yeah, potentially.
There's a good chance that he had, you know? And so if he finds out that his wife had this boyfriend, she's missing, her car is found, but her keys and her stuff, you know what I mean? So like, in his mind, he's like, she took off. And what he didn't want to do, what he did not want, is he didn't want her showing back up and taking the kids. Because, you're right, there weren't divorce proceedings before that. So if she did show back up, she could take the kids because she's their mom. It's not parental kidnapping when there isn't a custody agreement in right. place. Like,
yep.
She could just take them.
Yeah, so he's, I mean, if he has an attorney at this point, which is the smart thing to do because, you know, at one point he was a suspect, so it
right.
would be smart to lawyer up.
But I don't even know if this is like a criminal attorney. I think he might just be a divorce attorney.
Yeah, well, I mean, one way or the other,
I mean,
that's a smart move.
Well, yeah, and so the court did grant him temporary full custody, but if Rose did come back, she could have gone to court and contested it,
sure.
and then it would have, like, switched over to a normal, like, divorce/custody situation, right? So all that did was it protected him and his kids from her coming back and taking the kids legally.
Yeah.
Legally,
because she could still
physically do it, obviously.
Right.
But yeah, it was just to put that protection in place. And, you know, from his perspective, if he's genuinely thinking that she just ran off with some guy, like, yeah, you're going to file for divorce.
Yeah. No. You know? And honestly, that entire line of thinking is actually really smart. And it's not often seen from that perspective, like the flipped perspective of a man
right.
doing this to, you know, hold on to his kids or whatever. It's typically the other way around.
Yeah.
Yes. And I know that's very stereotypical or whatever. I get it. But it isn't normally seen that way. So while some people might say that's suspicious, it's not. It legally protects him to have the rights to his kids. So now that's in place. He has at least a temporary full-time custody order put in place. So now if she does show back up and takes the kids, then that is parental kidnapping.
Exactly.
And then she could get arrested for that.
Yeah.
On top
he has legal recourse.
Right.
But the headline is missing woman's husband files for divorce.
Yeah, of course.
You know?
Because that's the fucking thing that people are going to.
Yeah. And so when you just look at that, it's like, okay, well, that's suspicious.
And yes, if you read the headline without the context.
Well, of course,
yes.
But that's what people do. We read headlines. We don't read articles.
But,
damn.
But like, no, I'm on his side at this point. Like,
yeah.
if we are to believe the way this played out,
mm-hmm.
and then he finds out later that she had a boyfriend and like all the signs are pointing to she just rolled out with this dude.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, absolutely. Do whatever you need to do to protect your kids so that you can hang on to them.
Yeah. And, you know, so Christopher didn't really do a lot of talking to the press around this time.
Good.
Which
Good.
Is smart.
Sorry. I know everybody, there's judgment all over the place as far as the amount of talking to the press and all that. No.
Well, no, but I mean, we talked about that in Summer's case, too.
You're
going to
get judged.
No matter what.
No matter what.
Yeah.
And I hate the media, so like, I would never talk to the press.
Yeah. Apparently, one reporter did get a hold of him by phone around this time, and he just said, quote, "I hope she's okay, and I hope she gets a hold of somebody," end quote.
Clearly, he doesn't believe that she's dead or anything.
No, at this point, absolutely not.
Yeah.
So whatever everyone thought about his quick divorce, like there wasn't any evidence that a crime had even occurred, much less that Christopher had been the perpetrator. Though as the investigation went on, police did begin to suspect that foul play was involved. Like I said, they were interviewing everybody in her life and they were all saying, they're like, listen, yeah, the marriage had problems. Like, yeah, maybe she did have this boyfriend or whatever, but they're like, there's no way in hell she ever would have left her kids. Like, that is just not something she would have done. Like, she had that done to her. She was much older than her children, but her mom did run off when she was, like, in high school and not have contact with the family for a couple of years. I'm sure she wouldn't want to do that to her children. And from what everybody says, that just was not the type of person she was. And in fact, a big reason why she, you know, was trying to make the marriage work is because she was afraid that if they did split, that Christopher would try to get custody.
Okay. Well, I see all those arguments. You're also dealing with somebody who just had two kids within 19 months of each other?
Within 10, they were 10 months apart.
Okay, so imagine the postpartum.
Yes. That is another point to bring up because apparently Rose had dealt with depression issues in general at times. And while it has not been confirmed that she did suffer from postpartum depression at this point, I mean, you can imagine.
Yeah, come on.
That absolutely could have been a factor in whatever was happening.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And that, and I'm not singling that out or whatever, but it is certainly something to consider.
Right. It's just another thing that you have to look at, right?
Right.
Just like, you know, I brought up the potential head injury, you know, because so initially, like Candace talked to reporters a lot when Rose went missing. And one of her initial theories, like at the very beginning of this, was that she thought that Rose did have a concussion and like was maybe disoriented and wandered away, basically.
Yeah. I mean, I don't necessarily think she wandered away, but I think that that could have also contributed to it.
Yeah.
So you have somebody that potentially is going through postpartum depression, who then has, again, this is all potentially has a concussion. I mean,
mm-hmm.
maybe has a boyfriend. I mean, there's all kinds of things. Is not in the healthiest relationship.
Right.
There's all of these things playing into it. It could be that she just wanted out.
But, so in addition to people just saying she wasn't that type of person, she was like a cash person. So she didn't really use like credit cards or anything like that. but she apparently had very little cash on her at the time. She also didn't take any of her clothes. She left her laptop behind, you know, like she just left behind the things that you would think you would take if you were going to start a new life. Okay. I know.
Many cases have we gone through where people are allegedly left to start a new life and they literally left everything?
Right.
At least she took her phone and her purse.
Yeah. I mean, that's true.
And who knows? Who knows what the boyfriend had? Maybe he had money.
Yeah. I don't know. So when police pulled her phone records, you know, they also didn't find anything in the days leading up to her disappearance that seemed out of the ordinary. You know, so nothing that would indicate that like there was planning going on or, you know, anything like that. Her phone was also never used after the night that she went missing. The Polk County Sheriff's Office continued to investigate, but when they kept coming up empty-handed, they sent the entire case file to the FBI. Their missing persons division basically retraced, you know, Polk County steps, but really didn't find anything that they had missed. Eventually, the Wisconsin Department of Criminal Investigation also got involved in the case, but they didn't really come up with anything new either. And that's what's so nuts about this case. Like, there's really no more information than that nearly 13 years later. No other physical evidence has ever been located. I mean, there have been random sightings of her over the years, but, you know, nothing that's ever been substantiated. And 1 year after she went missing, Polk County Sheriff Tim Moore told WXCE, quote, "There are no witnesses, very little information. Quite frankly, we were told by the FBI that they were surprised to see how many man hours we had poured into this investigation because there is no crime at this point. We still maintain that we need to be prepared if there is a crime," end quote.
Well, okay, good on him.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we don't often praise police on this show, but like, yeah, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good perspective to have. You know, you have a missing person and there is no crime that has actually occurred that you have evidence of, but to keep it on the forefront and to look at it as though a potential crime may have occurred, like that is,
yeah. So you're actually like gathering the evidence, and so that's not only talking
that's
to
not
people,
only a progressive way of thinking, but it's also like realizing that, you know, a missing persons case doesn't at this point, once the initial investigation is done, is not actually pulling any man hours away from you. So you're not doing what Baltimore does where they say it's shelved.
Right. Chicago is the other one.
Yeah. Chicago was like, what did they say? It was like
inactive.
Inactive.
Yeah.
Like what the fuck does that mean?
Yeah.
like it's in order for it to be an active case, it just needs to be assigned to somebody.
Yeah.
So, like, it doesn't take any resources away to just have it, you know, on somebody's desk.
Right.
So I'm good on that sheriff.
Yeah. And, you know, so interestingly, though, again, I mentioned that friend of Candace's, who is also named Rose, she has really been the only one that I've seen who's been publicly critical of the sheriff's department because she believes that Christopher did have something to do with it. She thinks that they haven't gone after him hard enough. But I mean, just based on like what we know, I mean, you can kind of see why they didn't really go after him harder, you know?
Yeah. And I wouldn't, until she's found, until the story is completely, you know, known, you can't rule him out as a suspect.
Yeah.
But if you've already searched the house, if you've already searched the car, if you've potentially geolocated the cell phone calls, triangulated the cell phone calls, if the evidence isn't there, the evidence isn't there.
Yeah. Yeah. They also, and yeah, I actually didn't mention this. So, where the car was found, they also, you know, checked the surrounding surveillance cameras. Interestingly, no cameras caught the car getting to that parking lot, but apparently there were a couple ways to get there that weren't covered by cameras. So they did check that. They apparently went door to door in the area around the parking lot. And there was a small lake nearby that they drained.
Wow. So they really...
Yeah.
That's pretty extensive.
Yeah. I mean, as extensive as you can get with no evidence, you know?
Yeah. I mean, for all we know, she left.
Yeah. But, you know, it doesn't seem likely, especially now, given that it's been 13 years.
Sure.
But, yeah. 2019 marked the 10-year anniversary of Rose's disappearance, and Polk County Sheriff Brent Walk held a press conference to help republicize her case. And again, this is the new sheriff. I've named like three different sheriffs, but, you know, all of them have treated this case with importance, you know? Sheriff Walk said, quote, "I don't really like the name cold case, as I think it implies we have pushed it off to the side. And as law enforcement, we never give up. We never quit searching for the answers," end quote. The sheriff's office also produced like a really nice video. Like, they hired a very professional company to do this that they shared with the media and on their social media pages in order to basically restart the conversation around Rose and her case. We'll post it on our blog. And Sheriff Walk said, quote, "Our hope is that we can stimulate some talk in the social media avenue as well as just get our message out to the community that we are still looking for answers in the mystery of the disappearance of Rosemary Bly," end quote.
Again, fantastic.
Yeah.
Like, okay, so she went missing in 2009. Like, yes, social media was a thing, but not nearly to the extent that it is now. Yeah. So... That's great police work. I mean, you know,
yeah,
we,
no,
we don't
it's
often
good.
Say
I
it,
know,
but like,
I know.
Wow, like getting that out now, even now, and just yeah. like keeping her in the social media presence and having that thought to push that out as a 13-year-old case.
Yeah.
Like that's great.
Yeah, exactly. And so all of this happened in 2019, you know, before Summer's disappearance. So like it had nothing to do with the publicity that happened because of that. Like this is just something that they were doing on their own, you know, because it was 10 years at that point and they weren't any closer to finding answers. So, you know, the only real evidence in this case that we have is that DNA, which has been run through CODIS several times with no results. And so now police are hoping that someone who knows something will come forward. Maybe somebody who knew who Rose was seeing at the time, if she was, you know, seeing somebody. Maybe someone who saw her with a man who wasn't her husband, which actually somebody did give a tip. I saw that in a Facebook group a couple of years. Actually, no, it was in 2010. It was like the year after she went missing. Somebody did say like, "Hey, I saw her in a McDonald's drive-thru in a car with a man who wasn't her husband," and that ended up getting pushed to investigators, you know? So they're looking for things like that. You know, maybe somebody who saw her car between the time she left the house and when it was found 5 days later in that parking lot 30 miles away, you know? They just need somebody to either come forward with something they've been holding back or for somebody just have their memory jogged, you know, who wasn't necessarily aware that they had information that might be important to this case. So, you know, going back to Christopher real quick, what I will say is when I first looked into this case, right? Like, you know, you always automatically think it's the husband. Then, you know, when I'm gathering the news articles and stuff, you see that he filed for divorce three weeks later and, you know, that he like never really talked to reporters. And it's just like, okay, red flag, red flag. But he has stayed involved. You know, there was a Facebook group that was started for her in 2010. You know, in early 2010. So like not too long after she disappeared. And, you know, he was a member of it and he commented and people would say terrible things to him and accuse him of stuff. And he's still around. Like I was watching a YouTube interview with somebody connected to the case, you know, on some YouTube show, and he showed up in the chat. Like he's around. He is still involved. He doesn't really talk a lot publicly about it. Like he doesn't want to be interviewed, you know, by any of these things or anything like that. But like, and he is around, he is paying attention mainly because he wants to make sure that his kids are kind of left out of the whole thing. Chris stayed in St. Croix Falls. He didn't leave. He, you know, obviously had custody of the kids. He maintained custody of his girls, and he's been raising them for the past 13 years as a single father. He hasn't remarried. He might even still be in the same house, if not in the same house, in the same town. And apparently from, you know, what other family members have said, you know, the girls are doing great. They're like 13, 14 now and just normal teenagers, basically. He's stayed put and he's just been doing that this whole time. You know, just to wrap up and talk a little bit about Rose and Summer. We talked in the Summer Walls episode again about how people on the internet were going like crazy over her parents, over Don and Candace and their past and their like potential drug use and police records and, you know, all of this stuff. Like I said, Candace had two kids. She lost custody of them. Don had at least one other child he also lost custody of. Then they had these four kids. Summer goes missing. The three boys get taken away. Right. So, I mean, it's basically a shit show. Then, you know, we learn about Candace's family. We learn about how her mom ran off and, you know, how her mom was potentially abusive. We learn that Candace's sister Rose called CPS on her when Rose was just a teenager. Their cousins married to a convicted sex offender. And that sex offender lived in the house in Tennessee. Grandma Candace's brother is also a convicted sex offender. You know, so people have been like, okay, well, where was Don when Rose went missing? And it's like, they were living in Arkansas. Like, I don't think he ever met Rose. People are like, where was the uncle? Like, he was locked up. Like, you know what I mean? I mean, yeah. They are really trying.
They're reaching.
For- yeah. And really trying to find ways in which these two cases are connected. And I don't think that they are. But what I do think is that with the generational, like we were talking about, the generational trauma, the generational abuse, that if you're talking about victimology, the people in this family just tend to end up being at a higher risk.
Yes.
To become victims,
yes,
of a crime.
Yes.
So I don't think that they're related in that. I don't think that the same person took both of these people.
No.
Or anything like that. But they're related in that, again, it's
they're just related in the fact that, so the cycle is, the common terminology everybody thinks of cycles is cycle of violence, but it's way beyond that.
Right.
And this is the cycle of being in a situation. So you tend to gravitate toward situations that, or relationships that are familiar to you. So if you're familiar with a relationship that is volatile, is potentially abusive, mm-hmm. has all of those red flags and the markers that you just mentioned, that was your life, that becomes your life, and then it's just like you said, it exposes you to the potential for not a missing persons per se.
No, case, but to be a victim of some something. Sort of crime.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just feel like they were probably a little bit more vulnerable than
yes.
maybe the average population.
Right.
You know?
And that's the key. They were more vulnerable. We are not blaming them.
No, God, no.
But they are more vulnerable to those situations and scenarios because of their familiarity
right.
with those situations.
For instance, like regardless of who was potentially abusing who in Rose's marriage, it was a volatile
right. relationship
that does sound like it was abusive in some way, right?
So one way or the other.
It was abusive.
Who
right.
knows?
Exactly. Yeah. So she's in this abusive relationship, this volatile relationship. So it would stand to reason that there's a good chance that maybe if she did have a boyfriend, that it was also a volatile relationship, yes. that it was also potentially an abusive relationship. And because we don't know who this guy is or anything about him, maybe it turned into something worse.
Yeah. We don't know.
You know? And whereas, so you've got that. And again, the victimology making you just more vulnerable to something like that. You know, that's kind of the case in Rose's story. With Summer, it's obviously not her because she's five.
But it's her family.
Right. And so with Don and Candace, especially with Candace, there's this longstanding history of drugs. There's this history of, you know, hanging around shady people. There's drug dealers and, you know, sex offenders and people like this coming in and out of the house. So it's opening Summer up and, you know, making her more vulnerable to somebody coming in and doing something to her,
right?
Because we talked about, you know, if she was taken from the basement, it has to have been somebody who is known to the family.
Right.
It's not about blame. It's not about fault with Summer, you know, or Rose at all. It's just that these situations, you know, it opens them up.
Right.
To something bad happening, and something bad did happen to them. Almost 12 years to the day after Rose's disappearance, her niece, whom she never met, Summer Wells, went missing, also with nearly no physical evidence. And like her aunt, she remains missing. But her story has led to Rose's story getting out to more people. And we can only hope that it will also lead to answers in these two tragedies. Rosemary Bly has been missing from St. Croix Falls, Wisconsin since August 21, 2009. Rose is a white female with light brown hair and brown eyes. She has a tattoo of red cherries on the outside of her right ankle, and her ears and her belly button are pierced. At the time of her disappearance, her hair was cut in a chin-length bob. She may color her hair blonde or red. Rose was 21 when she went missing. She would be 34 today. If you have any information regarding the disappearance of Rosemary Bly, please contact the Polk County Sheriff's Office at 715-485-8300. You can see all of the sources for this episode along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketsa. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!
And cats, they're not usually known for their love of swimming, but one feline in Northern Virginia is hitting the water instead of the gym in an effort to lose weight. Holly is a 13-year-old cat who dislikes the outdoors and other physical activities. But with encouragement from her owner and weekly visits to the Old Town Pet Resort, Holly has managed to lose 1 pound in 6 weeks. Stay with us, everybody. We've got a lot more to come.